Hi there, everybody. Welcome to After Hours with me, Rick Kogan. In the incredible small world, I have my friend Peter Guarino in here, and he has a special guest, J.R. Sullivan, otherwise known as Jim Sullivan. And in the incredible small world department, Jim is like, maybe you might know my uncle. I go, well, who's your uncle? Dave Condon. I wrote a story about the curse of the billy goat today, and there is no human being more responsible than giving fuel to that curse than the legendary sports writer Dave Condon of your Chicago Tribune. Jim, how are you? Great
Very
to
good,
have you back.
Yeah.
You've moved back to
moved
Chicago.
Back to Chicago, yes.
And in the other small world department, you go, Rick, you reviewed me in a show 20-some years ago. And I'm crossing my fingers saying, oh, please, yeah, please.
I wouldn't have brought it up.
Did I say you wasn't good. Yeah, well, you wouldn't have been here if it wasn't good. You were in the Ben Hecht show.
Yeah, Ben Hecht, a one-man show about Ben, where he talked about his, his adventures, as a cub reporter, right on through.
Sure,
Hollywood.
The child of the century, yeah. Kind of stuff. Yeah. You're here specifically because you have been chosen, and I want to figure out how this happens, Peter Guarino, to direct the first of the Chicago the Shakespeare project of Chicago's new season, Henry V. You guys have known each other for a long time, Peter.
Actually, not that long, but I've known of Jim's work for many years, and of course worked with Jim's brother Danny at the Shakespeare Project. So, going into this season, I decided to take a look at shaking things up a little bit and bringing in some guest directors. It's great for our actors to be able to work with professional directors of Jim's caliber. And we also have Steve Scott from the Goodman Theater.
Oh, sure, I know Steve.
Who's
sure.
going to be directing The Changeling for us in February. So it's great to have Jim on board. And
was there a lot of arm twisting involved, or no?
Yeah, I twisted his arm a
actually,
lot.
We sort of auditioned for it. He came and saw a few of our shows last mm-hmm. season, so we were sort of under the microscope there. And I guess if he didn't think we were up to it, but no, it's great.
Well, one of the things, Jim, and you can talk to me about this as a sort of outsider. One of the things that is continually amazing to me is the Shakespeare Project of Chicago is kind of under the radar mm-hmm. in this town. I think of it as getting to know them as a real vital part of the theater community here.
Well, based on what I saw, the two productions I saw, I agree. I mean, clear work, strong work, text-based, of course. It's the play's the star, and always very strong actors who know what they're doing, with that language.
Well, but also part of it for me, too, is the passion. You guys aren't doing it for the money. This is a true sort of a manifestation of their passion for Shakespeare and keeping Shakespeare viable in life. Yes, we have the Chicago Shakespeare Theater and Barbara Gaines, and that's a great thing. But this reaches a completely different audience, doesn't it, Peter?
Yeah, it does, because we perform at six different venues in the Chicago area, and we perform in libraries. So we don't have a theater. Again, we present what we call a theatrical reading, where the play is completely staged. The actors perform on book, but after like the first 30 seconds, the audience members really don't see the books anymore because they're so really entranced by what the actors are doing. And the other thing is our performances are all free to the public. So we perform here at the Newbury Library on Saturday mornings. We perform at the Niles Public Library on Friday evenings. We have two performances on Saturday, actually one at the Newbury and then in the afternoon up at the Wilmette Public Library. On Sunday, we're at the Highland Park Public Library. On Monday night, we're at the Vernon Area Public Library in Lincolnshire. And on Tuesday nights, we're at the Mount Prospect Public Library. So in addition to having a downtown location at the Newbury, which we love and value and
sure.
treasure, we have a really good geographic dispersion of our performances up and down the north. And south side.
You must have a really devoted kind of audience now, do you not?
Well, we do. Our audience members are also, to a great degree, our supporters because they donate to the Shakespeare Project. Again, we don't have a lot of or really any corporate funding to speak of. They've been coming for years because they believe in the mission of the Shakespeare Project, which is to make these plays accessible to all people. and to have them done by professional actors who really know what they're doing.
Yeah, and are passionate mm-hmm. about it.
And love it, yes.
Jim Sullivan, when you're directing, talk to me about the nature and the sort of nuance you have to bring to directing people who are on book. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
You would think, well, wait, you don't need to just read the words. It's much more nuanced than that, yes?
Yes, it is. And that happens naturally, I think, with this, you know, with language of this beauty and complexity. Given the fact that the actors coming into it are experienced with this, with language and Shakespearean texts, and given the fact, too, that they have the material a little bit ahead of time, and we talk to them, and this is what I'm thinking about. But the reading is staged, as Peter says. Spatial relationships carry meaning. What we see carries a meaning. That coheres to what is being said.
Mm.
That is one of the extraordinary things about the being present to a play, and the human body and the human voice embodying it, and that can happen in these circumstances as well. Audiences always fill in everything else with their imagination. In fact, this play famously asks them to do that when the chorus begins Henry V. Saying, well, of course, you know, all for a muse of fire, and readily admits that this poor plank is completely inadequate to telling a story of the epic story and a story of the scope of Henry V. And yet that's the very thing. You know, the audience provides that.
Yeah.
And sometimes big productions do too much of that for an audience, and so we're at the other end, certainly, of that spectrum. We won't have scenery, but we have the language, and that does everything.
But there's such a purity to it, though, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's why I like to read plays, because I get to use my imagination. But mm-hmm. there's a real purity to that. I'm not saying that great productions of these things with such things as costumes and sets mm-hmm. are distracting, but in a way, they can be distracting.
They can be. They're not always, but
sure.
They can be, and that can be a pitfall. But the primary thing always is to invite the audience and engage the audience as a participant in what's going on.
Yeah. Well, it begins October 14th, is that the date?
That's correct.
I'm looking around here.
Yeah.
October 14th to the 18th, Henry V.
Yes.
Go to, while we take a break, go to ShakespeareProjectChicago.org. It will give you all the information you need. And it is worth seeing, and it doesn't cost you a cent. And you can get Shakespeare. Now, maybe, you know, I'm going to talk to you about Lin-Manuel Miranda, too, because I heard him say some interesting things about Shakespeare recently at a conversation. We will be right back, but first I'll tell you this. Learn how real Chicagoans live. Ha! The day-to-day struggles and successes with health, fitness, and food. Watch Living Healthy Sundays at 11:30 a.m. on WGN-TV. We'll be right back. Welcome back to After Hours. We are talking with J.R. Sullivan, otherwise known as Jim Sullivan. He was here in town. He's moved back to town, so he's going to get more actively involved in theater, which is his life and his love. He is directing Henry V, which is the first production in the new season of the Shakespeare Project of Chicago, which is founded and run by my friend Peter Guarino, who is also here. We were talking about Shakespeare and Lin-Manuel Miranda, who is being lauded for using the voice of the streets and the voice and the vernacular, which is, in a way, what made Shakespeare so Shakespeare, I must say, in his time, was certainly as popular as Lin-Manuel Miranda without Twitter and TV and mass media, was he not?
Well, absolutely. The Elizabethan theater was a thriving environment. There could not be enough plays written during that time. The playwrights got together and wrote some plays collaboratively in almost an assembly-like fashion. But the point about Miranda and Shakespeare in terms of kind of what they share in common, when you listen to Hamilton and you hear that highly lyrical language,
right,
and then accompanied by song, and of course the language is written in a kind of hip-hop
No question.
Style rhyming, sure. Right? Mm-hmm. And there are certain similarities, of course, to the way Shakespeare wrote his blank verse and rhyming couplets. One of the misconceptions I think that people have sometimes is that people actually spoke like Shakespeare wrote his plays in everyday life. When he didn't, it's a very deliberate way of writing, in the same way that people today don't walk down the street and speak extemporaneously in hip-hop.
Right.
But there's something about the language, like in Hamilton, that people really hook onto. It takes you kind of like on a journey, right? It's lyrical. It moves. It's very, very evocative, right? And the same thing, of course, is true in Shakespeare's plays. So there's some similarities there, I think, when you look at both of them.
Do you think we are of an age when I think that Shakespeare was taught in schools? I mean, I certainly remember reading Romeo and Juliet, and that has kind of faded. You and I were talking about that, Jim. Does that trouble you? It must, on some level.
Yeah, it seems so to me sometimes. Like, I mean, one knows the difficulty of getting these great works into the hands of a reading public, and if they're in school, if it's not cool,
right,
to read, and especially to read Shakespeare, if it's not cool to go to a play, then a teacher is already up against it. It seems to me, but. But I sure hope they don't raise the white flag on this because once the experience is real, it is rich in possibilities. And you know, Peter is very right. Oscar Eustace, who's the artistic director of the Public Theater in New York, the original producer of Hamilton, and also the home of the New York Shakespeare Festival.
Right.
He made the same point that Peter has made. He said that, you know, this was the language of the streets.
Right.
And it was a language that was elevated into this art form. It is an artifice that raises perception, that causes the heart to beat faster, that creates a work of art from the material of life, of everyday life. And it is the same thing. And I had a teacher once that made the point that it is that iambic pentameter construction, ba bum ba bum ba bum ba bum, is the heartbeat itself, and that this play and all of his plays, when they are in verse especially, and enriched and complex by the interplay between prose and verse, depending on the speaker and their station in life. Has this enormous potential to thrill, to absolutely thrill.
Well put. And I think, you know, there may be, I mean, because of Hamilton, if no other reason, a sort of, if you were a teacher and you could say, look, this guy, hey, you kids, and he's giving a lot of free tickets away to schools, you love this guy, let's listen to this guy. Mm-hmm. I do think that could happen, or am I dreaming here?
Well, I think one of the greatest things about Hamilton in itself is it's drawing so much attention to the theater.
Mm-hmm.
It's a theatrical event. You know, it's not a movie.
Right.
And
exactly.
It's going to bring people into the theater, especially a whole new generation of kids for the first time.
Yeah.
Right. And hopefully make them lifelong theater goers. We have a few things that we're doing at the Shakespeare Project right now, which is part of our education outreach program. We have our 50-minute Hamlet, which has been going on now for 14 years.
Yeah.
We bring it into schools, and we're actually running a contest. So we're asking high school students to write us a letter and tell us why they'd like us to bring 50-minute Hamlet to their school. And then we will give away a certain number of performances, and we will come out and do 50-minute Hamlet at their school. And this is so important because we strongly believe that students' first experience of Shakespeare should not be necessarily reading a play.
See, and it should not be.
It should be
such
experiencing it, right?
Yes.
And then reading it.
Yes.
Right, and going back and probing it. So that's information is on our website about that contest. And we're also giving a free Shakespeare seminar for high school students at the Newberry Library, and that's going to be on Saturday, October 22nd. Absolutely free. Lunch is included.
Wow.
And it's facilitated by some of our actors at the Shakespeare Project. So we've got a lot of really great things going on for our high school students.
Jim, this might be one of the reasons you love coming back to Chicago. I mean, you've come back from New York, and this theater community, which you know really well, is
extraordinary. Theater community. It's a capital of theater in the world. It's the strongest imaginable center for ensemble work, and of course, ensemble work is a key to any successful Shakespearean production.
Sure. Tell me, we got 2 minutes, and we'll take a break, and I'm going to keep you guys on after the news. What's Henry V? I know this is an idiotic question, and I know the answer to it, but what's Henry V about?
Well, I think, you know, it's interesting because this play has been interpreted. I shouldn't speak too long here, right? Because if you're Olivier during the war, you present the heroic Henry to rouse the troops, so to speak, and that embattled nation, you know, succeeds, rises, and survives in glory. If you're Kenneth Branagh in the late 80s, you're doing a Henry V that, if it's not anti-war, it's very realistic about the venal evils of warfare, not the least of which is corruption and stupidity. The play, astonishingly, is about both of those things.
Exactly.
And you know, it's an act of reduction, you know, to try to say it's one or the other. And the beauty of it, I think, is to just let it be in all its complexity with all of that, you know, involved, and all of that being a truthful rendition of what I think Shakespeare was up to. He was a master of ambiguity and wanted it that way.
Does it in 5 or 6 seconds, Peter Guarino and I have talked about this. Shakespeare just stuns me. How could this person even exist? Do you know what I mean?
I had a teacher who thought he was an alien. It was
the only possible explanation. Yeah. We'll be back in a few minutes with Peter Guarino and J.R., otherwise known as Jim Sullivan, otherwise known as the nephew of Dave Condon. they're both with the Shakespeare Project of Chicago. You should go to ShakespeareProjectChicago.org while we're away. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I have a few more minutes with J.R. Sullivan, otherwise known as Jim, otherwise known as Ben Hecht, otherwise known as Dave Condon's nephew, and Peter Guarino, who they both are with the Shakespeare Project Chicago. Go to ShakespeareProjectChicago.org to get all the information about their first show, which is Henry V, which begins on October 14th. Jim, were you at all... You're a pro. When Peter asked you to do this, what was your reaction?
Absolutely. I mean, I love this play, and you know, to me, you know, we were talking before the news break about, well, what is it about? I mean, and there are thematic things you can talk about in terms of war and going to war, or and certainly ironic things we can talk about. The beginning of Henry V. Features this long scene where the king goes to the clergy to ask them if there's a moral justification for him going to the war. And you can't read that scene now without thinking of certain events in American history of the last, say, 13 years.
Sure.
When Colin Powell sat down at the UN and talked about the moral justification of that war.
Yeah.
So there are things like that that are fascinating and riveting, but to me it's about language itself. It's about the power of language. King Henry has, of course, that remarkable, you know, Agincourt speech, which is perhaps best known from the play. But it's filled with the power of language and the uses of language. And the quality of language. There are even comic scenes about when language is unintelligible. He's got a scene with a Welsh captain, a Scottish captain, and an Irish captain, and they're trying to dig a mine underneath the battlements to get to the French. But the problem is they can't understand what each other are saying. And I think it all links in this play to Henry, especially his ability to adapt himself through language and character to connection, to his hearers.
Wow.
And that is a particular power of his, and I think that's what Shakespeare is doing in the play itself.
Do you share with the actors, Peter, you are one of the actors in this show, do you share your thoughts about what you've just done for the listening audience? Do you share those thoughts before you begin directing, or do you, in conversation?
I think it's best to go about it in the conversation about the play while you're working about it. You know, not to... because you want – the play is the actor. You know,
right.
The actor is the most important person in the theater.
That's the kind of director every theater is looking
well,
for, yeah.
Everything I think about a play, everything that Shakespeare thinks about a play is in their hands and in their mouths. And so we have to do everything we can to make that clean and clear and strong and passionate and powerful. So I think, you know, rather than go on and on about what I think about it,
sure.
You'd rather, you know – drop hints about that and the occasional, signpost.
Right.
But to watch the actor discover these things for themselves is
it must be. It also must be joyful for you, too, to do that. Peter, you've directed a number of shows, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with Jim. I think, you know, the actors don't want to hear a lecture from you at the first table about what you think the play is about.
Right.
As a director, what you're trying to do always when you work on a scene is to help the actors really discover what their objectives are and where the conflict is and what they're trying to get from or do to that other person. And as long as you can, you know, stay with that, I think they're going to make discoveries for themselves. And certainly when other actors are sitting watching a scene being rehearsed, they're picking up cues too. They're learning things in terms of that.
How many characters in this play?
Well, there are 27 to 32, depending on as written.
Yeah.
But I think Shakespeare undoubtedly had the same thing going on that we do, you know, that people, you know, ran backstage into the Tyrian house and put on a different, you know,
because they had
sash
to,
and came out as another person.
You know, Shakespeare was in the business, too, of making money. Right. He had to make money at these shows.
Yeah.
What are your other plans for Chicago? I don't mean to put you on the spot, but he came back here and now
you're
here again, and this is a great way to get your feet wet again in the theater scene here.
Well, I hope I have a lot of friends here and a lot of wonderful colleagues, and I'm just looking forward to getting involved with everything here. I'm going to do a show for Silk Road Rising at the Christine Bunyan, marvelous actress, has put together a cabaret for the holiday season.
Oh, neat!
She asked me to direct that because I've done a number of these, you know, Christmas. Review sorts of shows over the years, so I'm thrilled to do that. And this theater is located in the church where I was married, so it just cohered, I think.
That's perfect. It is such a wonderful small world.
So I'm going to do that in November. I'm going to do another reading for Stone Hearth. They do work up at Chief O'Neill's.
Yeah, oh, sure.
They've sent a Aaron Sorkin one actor
look at. Yeah. Wow.
And then I'm going to go off to do a 12th night in Detroit in the wintertime for Wayne State University. So.
Well, it sounds like everything is good for you. The Chicago, the Shakespeare Project of Chicago has been, I've written about it a number of times. When's your benefit this year?
It's on Saturday, November 5th.
What is it?
The theme is called The Food of Love. So we are going to have what we call a love-inspired menu of things to eat. And the entertainment is going to be actors from the Shakespeare Project performing songs from Shakespeare's plays.
Oh, fantastic.
So, of course, we have the quote from Twelfth Night, which is, "If music be the food of love, play on." So it will be a kind of retrospective of a number of the songs, some of the original compositions that were written for the Shakespeare Project over the last, I would say, 8 to 10 years. And it should be a lot of fun. Anyone who would like an invitation can send an email to benefit@shakespeareprojectchicago.org.
Do have a great website.
Thank you.
That shakespeareprojectchicago.org is a great website that you can. And again, as Peter told you, these shows are all free, ladies and gentlemen. All you have to do is show up and be relatively quiet, I suppose. And you do, after the shows, have a kind of conversation with the audiences, too.
We do. We have three parts to our presentation. So we have an introduction of the play, which is given by a dramaturg prior to the show. Then we have the reading, which runs about 2 hours and 10 to 15 minutes. And then afterwards, people are invited to stick around and ask questions with the actors and the creative team. So, as I say, you can come in not knowing anything about the play, get a solid historical introduction to it, see a professional reading of the play, and then get your questions answered.
These guys, you still have people coming to join the project. I mean, young actors. I mean, it just, and it that must be certainly an indication of the continuing affection that actors especially have for Shakespeare.
Well, we were very gratified this past August. We had our season auditions at Actors Equity Association, and Jim and Steve Scott were both in attendance for those auditions. And I think we had about 150 actors show up for those auditions.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was really gratifying to see that turnout, and it's another reason why it's a good thing to bring in people like Jim and Steve to work with us.
And it's a great thing, too, because there's no money in this, you guys. You know that, don't you? He hasn't fooled you, has he, Jim?
No, he hasn't
fooled you.
So loved the plays themselves that's it, and I mean it.
Well, I know, and that's one of the reasons I admire both of you so much and admire what the Shakespeare Project of Chicago does. What do you think of Dave Condon before I let you go?
He was a
character and a half. I mean,
yeah, he was larger than life, literally, you know, because I grew up looking up to Uncle Dave. But yeah, my dad was a newspaper man as well. He out in Rockford.
Oh.
First in South Bend, the Trib, and then in Rockford for the Register Star out there. So journalism was in the family that way. But Uncle Dave was a raconteur, storyteller. He was funny, dramatic.
Flamboyant.
Smoke enormous cigars. And he, when I was 10 years old, he gave me this Go-Go Chicago White Sox book because of the 59.
Sure.
And I opened it up, and it was signed by Vec.
Oh.
Minoso, Jim
Parisio.
He not only the book, but to get all these autographs.
Oh, no kidding. I am terribly pleased you're back in Chicago. I'm sure Peter Guarino and the rest of the crowd at the Shakespeare Project of Chicago is equally proud. Go to the website, the first Henry V, October 14th, all over the October 14th to the 18th, all over this area. It'd be hard to miss, and it's free. And it's in libraries, and they talk about it beforehand. Then professional actors do it, and then you talk about it afterward. Welcome home.
Thanks.
Peter, it's always great
to see
you.
Thank you, Rick.
Always great to see you. We'll take a break, and then I'll play you some Curtis Mayfield.